and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more, till a thousand years should be fulfilled. And after that, he must be loosed a little season. Now we're down to verse 4. And I saw thrones. Now, probably these are thrones, something like a Daniel's throne. And if they were, they're not gold and ivory seats and so on, but no doubt silken cushions. In Daniel, they cast them down. That is, they tossed the cushions down on the floor so that the dignitaries could sit on them. And so here he says, I saw thrones, and they sat upon them. That is, somebody sat upon them. And judgment was given unto them. Again, we have them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded. Oh, that's the them. And I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. Now let's just turn back to chapter 7 just a moment. I don't remember the verse. I think I can find it rather quickly. Yes, verse 9. Revelation 7:9. Right after the sealing of the 144,000, he says, after this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude which no man can number, of all nations and kindreds of people and tongues, that is, out of all nations and kindreds of people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands. Evidently, these are overcomers. Well, they're the same group we had back here in chapter 20. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, salvation be to our God who sitteth upon the throne and unto the Lamb. And down in verse 13, and one of the elders answered, saying unto me, well, what are these which are arrayed in white robes, and whence came they? And I said unto him, sir, thou knowest. And he said to me, these are they which came out of great tribulation, and have washed their robes, and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Isn't that the same group that we have described here? They hadn't received the mark, they hadn't worshipped the image of the beast, they're the overcomers of the tribulation. And they lived, their reward then was to live and reign with Christ 1,000 years, which he promised to overcome. If that isn't a millennial kingdom, I wonder what it is. Of course, in this little book that I have here on my table, it says that Christ did not ascend, and he's not coming again. They have no coming of Christ to set up a kingdom and so on. They've spirited that all away and trying to make that some spiritual application rather than an actual fact. Well, that's just one of them. That's not the only one. There are a lot of these sects and isms and denominations and so on who deny the Word of God. Beware of them. They make God a liar. Now, verse 5, very important. But the rest of the dead, that is, those who were not overcomers, but were members of these churches, these seven churches, which are spoken of in chapters 2 and 3, and as to whom the book is written. It's not written to folks outside. It doesn't take in Gentiles unless it specifically says so. And so here's a bunch of the dead who were not overcomers. They didn't stand true. They compromised somewhere in order to live, in order to keep their families alive, and so on. And so the rest of the dead live not again until the 1,000 years are finished. This is the first resurrection. All right? The rest of the dead live not. So they were not living, they were dead. Now Satan wouldn't have you believe that. He tells you the dead are living, more alive than what they ever were in this life. That they have immortal souls and all that sort of thing that Satan puts out. But these folks are dead, and they stayed dead until that 1,000 years were finished. Now, here is a strange thing in the Bible. This is the first resurrection. What is? When these dead are raised after the 1,000 years are finished? Or is it these folks in verse 4, which lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years? You see, sometimes the Greek order can throw you. For the resurrection of these folks who had been beheaded for the witness of Christ before God, not worshiped the beast or the image or received his mark, they have been resurrected and they lived. That is, were resurrected and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. Now, specifically, 1,000 years. It doesn't say what happens on beyond that. Now, we do have some scriptures that bear possibly upon after that. There may be some more reigning, and quite likely there is. There might be up to 5,000 years more of reigning after the millennium is over. Quite likely will be, and might even be more. But at least there must be that much to fulfill the meanings of figures or numbers. Of course, now, you can search and see on that. They'll take my word for it. Blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection. Actually, it's the former resurrection, not the first, because there's only two of them. And when we have two, we usually speak of the former and the latter rather than the first and the last. Although in our English nowadays, why we've got so we don't make fine distinctions like that. We speak rather loosely. And you'll probably notice that I do too. So blessed and holy is he that hath part in the first resurrection, the former resurrection. On such a second death hath no power. They shall be priests of God, and Christ shall reign, and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. All right, you have it in verse 4, and here you have it again. They reigned with Christ 1,000 years. It's twice it said. And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. I have spoken of being chained and kept in the abyss. And here he's loosed out of his prison. So this abyss, whatever it is his prison. Now it's not a hole down in the earth somewhere, I don't think. The abyss can also mean the atmosphere. And certainly must mean it in Genesis 1-2, where the deep is a translation of the Septuagint, abyssos, or abyss, which is in the Greek translation of the Hebrew. He's tied up during this period of time, 1,000 years, away from the earth. No contact with it. That's what it means. He can't deceive the nations. He can have nothing to do with what's going on here during that 1,000 years. Now, you would think that if Satan were tied up like that, bound, for 1,000 years, and not even present here on the earth, so he could do any damage or anything, you would think he'd have a perfect condition here on the earth. And you know, people do suppose that. When you talk about a millennium, they think that's a perfect time. I think we'd better go back and read chapter 2 in the Psalms again on that, just to remind us that popular notions aren't true. Psalm 2. You would have a companion Bible, can quickly find that, about page 723. A description of the millennial times when Christ is ruling on his throne here on the earth. Lord of lords, and King of kings, and Lord of lords. And yet, and we have just quoted in the New Testament what we have here, the first two verses. Why do the heathen rage? And the people imagine a vain thing. The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, they're taking counsel. This is doing in secret. It's not an open rebellion, because they get caught, they would be executed immediately. That's the rule during the millennial reign. Even if they were caught plotting, they'd be executed and thrown into the fires of the city dump of Jerusalem, which burn continually during the millennium, burning the refuse from the city, and the bodies of dead animals and criminals who have been executed and thrown out there. The very last of Isaiah describes it. And you have it in Matthew mentioned several times. called a hellfire. That's Gehenna fire. It's not hell. The other word is translated hell, Hades. Gehenna fire. And so these folks are plotting on the silence, in secret. And they'd like to rebel. They don't want Christ to reign as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Israel said at one time before Pilate, we will not have this man rule over us. We'll take Barabbas. And the Lord is not accepted by millions during the millennial reign. They don't bow the knee except when they might have to in order to save their necks. And it's spoken about that too, how they pretend. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. He's got the upper hand. Satan is bound. Then shall he speak unto them in his wrath and vex them in his sore displeasure. Yet have I set my king, God is speaking now, upon my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. And then the Lord himself speaks. The Lord has said unto me, thou art my son. This day have I begotten thee. And notice your notes on that in the companion Bible. I have begotten thee means to bring to a full birth or resurrection from the dead. And Paul uses this very verse to prove resurrection in Acts 13. In his speech at Antioch. Ask of me and I'll give thee the heathen for thine inheritance. How that has been misused. And the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them. And that's what he does during the millennium. And this is quoted in chapters 2 and 3 of Revelation. I will break them with a rod of iron. And the overcomers will help in that. They will rule over the nations too with him. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Be wise now, therefore, ye kings, be instructed, ye judges of the earth, during the millennium. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, that is, come to him, and yield to him, lest he be angry and ye perish from the way, when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all they that put their trust in him during the millennial time. That doesn't sound like perfection, does it? Well, that's what we have there. Now go back to our chapter 20 again, if I haven't lost my place. Ready for verse 7. And when 1,000 years are expired, this is the sixth and last time it's used, and when 1,000 years are expired, when they're over, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. I think you can about tell what that time will be as we read back in the prophet Daniel, and I'll not go back to that particular one now because our time goes so fast. But no doubt you've heard it and read it, that there's an extra 75 days over and above the millennium. And it's divided into 30 and 45 days. The 30 coming first, no doubt that is when the bowls of wrath are poured out, as we've said before. And the 45 days, the judgment of the nations, the living nations at times, we find in Matthew 25. And the setting up of the kingdom and getting the officers and so on all in their places, overcomers judged. And also in that time is the great supper of the Lamb. And Isaac and Abraham and Jacob will be there, as well as others from the east and from the west. So we begin to sum some of these things up now. And after the 1,000 years have expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations. Now we had over here, he was bound in verse 3, he should deceive the nations no more. So while he was bound, he didn't deceive the nations. Now he's let loose after 1,000 years, and he goes right out to deceive the nations. He's the same old fellow. Being in prison for 1,000 years doesn't change his character one bit. And as a usual thing, serving a prison sentence does not change a man. Very seldom. If he's a murderer when he goes in, he's quite likely, when he gets out, if he gets out before his death, he'll still be a murderer. And that is one reason why that the Mosaic Law, as well as clear back to Noah coming out of the ark after the flood, that murder should be punished by death, capital punishment. Or we can almost say, once a murderer, always a murderer. And Satan doesn't change, and never will. And he goes out to deceive the nations, which are in the four quarters of the earth. Four quarters, four directions, which includes all the earth. Gog and Magog. That means the east and the west. That's all those words mean. So don't try to apply them to any nations or anything that we have today. They're just simply the directions. It includes, as the note says, the Gentile nations. People try to make that Russia and maybe Egypt or the United States and some others and so on. Well, they're not in the prophecy at all. It's just simply those from the east and from the west. To gather them together to battle. Now organize them quick. The number of whom is the same as the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed or surrounded the camp of the saints of battle and the beloved city. So Jerusalem is the point of attack. Now the valley of Jehoshaphat, not the valley of Jehoshaphat, I got the wrong one. Armageddon. Armageddon is actually an H on it. Runs from not far from Jerusalem, clear up to around Mount Carmel, a long, long valley. Make an ideal place, as it has many times in the past, been many battles fought in that valley. And this, no doubt, is where that they will assemble and then surround the city of Jerusalem. And they get everything all ready. Now, I don't know from the description that we have in the prophecies especially, what we have here, I rather think that these folks will not have modern warfare arms. They will probably have developed sophisticated weapons to the place that they won't dare to have any metal on them, or missiles would find them out and get them. And even at that, we have missiles that can detect heat, even without the human body. Seek them out and destroy them. So they may do everything to combat that sort of thing. No doubt they'll have some kind of protection on. But we do find in the prophecies concerning this that they will be fighting with swords and spears of wood, like way back in Egypt's past. No metal. And now how Jerusalem will be defended, I don't know. It doesn't need any defense. God is its defense. Probably they won't have any armor. Probably they won't have any artillery or anything of that kind. Won't need it in that day because during the millennium they've been God's people. He's going to take care of them. And he will at this point. Satan can't believe that. It's written in the Word and has been for thousands of years, all this. But Satan doesn't believe it. You see, he's in a position he can't believe. And you find even people who call themselves Christians today who are in that same boat. Impossible to believe. They know it, they can quote it, but impossible to believe it. Satan can quote the Bible, probably the whole thing. Doesn't believe it. Now that's hard for a lot of folks to believe, isn't it? Now you see that word believe, how it comes up. And so they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city. And heaven's artillery opened up. And fire came down from God out of heaven. Just like it did on Sodom and Gomorrah, maybe. Because it's described with practically the same words. And devoured them. And the devil deceived them with cast in the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, but it should be were cast. and shall be tormented day and night, forever and ever. Now, why didn't somebody correct me up here when I was talking here on verse 8? My mind began to wander a little bit, and I was thinking about the Battle of Armageddon. This isn't. That's over. This is the end of the millennium, not the beginning of it. I get napping once in a while, so you'll have to pardon me on that. We've talked about the Battle of Armageddon. We read about that in our lessons here before. And then just dawned upon me all at once. I've made a mistake. Well, that's the first mistake I ever made. So you can excuse it, please. There won't be any weapons to gather up here because these folks will be burned up with fire. And there won't be anything left. There won't be any bones to pick up and bury. There won't be any weapons to pick up. This will be a complete destruction. Because fire came from God out of heaven and devoured them. There's nothing about them going out and cleaning up a battlefield or anything of the kind. And the devil, that old serpent, that deceiver, that deceived them, was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet were cast. Now notice something here. This is something in this verse that very few people know, because the translators left out a pronoun. And shall be is plural, and they shall be. Now Satan is singular. And we can be sure that the beast and the false prophet have been dead for 1,000 years. They were cast into a literal lake of fire. That's what it is. And if a figurative speech, it means they cease to exist. So either way it is, they're dead and gone. So they're not tormented. Satan's a different kind of a being. Fire isn't going to bother him very much. In fact, any tormented he gets is not the fire itself. It's something else. And what it is, I don't know. Because he could land right on the sun. That wouldn't bother him. I mean, he isn't that kind of a being like we are. But they... Now, I asked this question once. I'm not going to tell you right now who I asked it of, but he was a teacher. I had in my mind something. Back in chapter 12, we find at the beginning of the tribulation, Satan and his angels are cast into the earth. And so far as I can see, those angels are never mentioned again, unless it is here. And so this may be Satan and his angels, tormented day and night forever and ever, or to the age of the age. Well, that's the end of him. And of course, it has been prophesied back in the Old Testament that he'd be no more. Read Ezekiel 28. Now the scene goes on. 1,000 years are over. And the 75 days are over. And Satan is out of the picture as far as having any influence anymore at all. And I saw a great white throne. Now, if this is what a lot of people think it is, then it would have to be a black throne, I imagine. But it's a great white throne. Great white. There are no other folks mentioning this. When this judgment is made here, Satan is not there to accuse anybody. He's been disposed of. For there'd be no accuser. And I wonder who sits on this throne. To whom has all judgment been given? All judgment. To whom has all judgment been given? We're told back in John's Gospel, very plainly. To the Son, to Christ. And yet, in verse 12, it says that the dead, small and great, shall stand before God. These folks who don't believe in the deity of Christ are going to have a problem with that, aren't they? That all judgments are given to the Son. Now, many times he's spoken of as being God and equal with the Father and the like. And yet here is one judging and called God. Now, if there was ever a place in the Bible that tells us of the deity of Christ, this is it. Now, let's just take a look back in Job 14. Get the setting. About page 683. And let's see the verse that I want. Verse 12. He says that everything else seems to go. And he says, man giveth up the ghost, and where is he? So in verse 12, so man lieth down and riseth not till the heavens be no more, or literally in the Hebrew, become unstitched. They shall not awake nor be raised out of their sleep until the heavens be no more. And over here in the Revelation, we have something very similar. Verse 11. From whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, there was found no place for them. So Job was looking forward to this for mankind in his day to have a resurrection, that is, the believers. And he himself had that hope. You see, he had no hope of the millennial reign. Job was not a child of Abraham. He had no part in the promises made to Israel. And so he's looking forward to the same time that the dying malefactor did on Calvary, who would be in paradise. He'd be raised at this great white throne too, and enjoy the blessings of the post-millennial kingdom. And you can find many more references and so on, which we won't go into now, but this will give you something to work on. Now, get again in verse 11, and I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heavens fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God. Now, did you ever see dead people stand up? Now, just wait a minute. Oh, yes. The Lord ate supper one time in the house of, or the home of Simon the leper. Well, Simon was no longer a leper. He had been. And these folks are no longer dead. They had been. They've been raised. And so he saw the dead, those who had been dead, small and great, stand before God. And the books were opened. Now, if the books were opened, well, you know what you think of in books. Right away, you're going to find credits and debits, aren't you? Oh, the books are open, and they're judged as to whether they will have life or not. Is it a general resurrection, is it, that people used to believe in, that all the people be raised, and some would be put on one side, and some on the other, some saved, and some lost, and so forth? Is that it? We've had all of these wicked folks taken care of just before this. When they were destroyed in verse 9, all the wicked folks have been destroyed and destroyed forever. Well, now here again, who is he writing to here? The seven churches of Asia Minor. and I saw the dead. Oh, I see. This is the rest of the dead you have down in verse 5. There are some who were in a resurrection at the beginning of the millennium, the first resurrection, as they call them. But the rest of the dead live not again until 1,000 years are finished. Speaking especially of these people who are in the churches, believers. And so the rest of the believers are here standing before God. And the books are opened to judge them for their works, their debits, and their credit. For every man should be judged according to what he has done. That is, believers. Now, unbelievers that can't do anything to be judged by because they haven't believed. They don't even belong to God. So they can't be in this. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And so they can call the roll. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books, according to their works. Now, if this was to whether they'd be saved or not, it would not be according to their works, it'd be according to their faith. Works has nothing to do with a person's salvation. But works are expected of those who are saved. And these folks are saved and they're judged according to their works. Now this is foreshadowed by some parables and lots of prophecy. Now we can make a big subject of that and go into it in detail. When our Lord was speaking some parables, he spoke about the three servants who were given pounds or talents. And these were servants. And when he came back again, they were judged according to what they had done. That was the principle. And even in the dispensation of the mystery, you will find in Colossians that each shall receive what he has done. The principle still goes on. That is how a man is judged. For his reward, for his works. Not for life. That's on faith, not works. Now getting into the kingdom was based a great deal upon works. These folks who got into the kingdom already had life. But there were many who, even to say, Lord, Lord, couldn't enter. And the Lord told his disciples that unless their works, their deeds, their righteousness exceeded that of the scribes and Pharisees, they could not enter. And we find in the dispensation of the mystery in Ephesians 5:5 that there are those who can forfeit the inheritance. Even as Moses, because of unbelief, forfeited a part in the promised land. Saved, yes. But the reward, he missed. So here are people who are judged according to their works. Now, we know that they hadn't done anything right or they wouldn't be here in this resurrection. They'd have been in the first resurrection. So they had compromised. They had done things that they ought not do. And they're judged according to those. And so they were judged, every man, according to their works. And at this time, at the time of the great white throne, death and hell were cast in the lake of fire. Now we know right away that it's not a literal lake of fire. For death and hell are abstract nouns, not concrete nouns. It simply means that this is the last of death and hell. When people stop dying, death has ceased. When people stop dying, then there's no hell for anybody to go into. That is, a place of the dead, the grave. And so here is where death or dying ceases and there's no longer any use for a grave. And so death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. And says this is the second death. What is it? Well, now you see, we go back and we find that there are some people who are not of the believers, not of Israel, but of the false seed, and they are subject to the second death. Now, you should look up second death every time it occurs and see what it does really mean. I notice in here that the word this is feminine, health. Now, this is masculine, death is masculine, but lake of fire is feminine. So then I know that the lake of fire is not the second death. I had to use my glass here to look at this because I've written that intersifying over these when I was studying it and getting the words straight. And I put an F over lake of fire, an M over this, and an M over death. Feminine, and then this is the second death, masculine. So we cannot say that the lake of fire is the second death, in this case at least. Now you'll have to search all through the rest of the occurrences of the lake of fire and see if that is what is called a second death, or if that is something different. In fact, the word, the term lake of fire in the Hebrew simply means that's the end of it. So when Satan is cast in the lake of fire, that's the end of him. When anything else is cast in the lake of fire, that's the end of it. It's over. Just as you say, well, my plans went up in smoke. They have a lot of idiomatic expressions like that, in English, if we don't know that way of speaking and the way of thinking, they sound rather strange to us. And if any of you folks who are listening have ever tried foreign languages, you find one of the most difficult parts of it is learning their idioms, idiomatic expressions. And some languages have a lot more than others. I don't think there's any language that has much more idiomatic expressions than French has. Just full of it. You look into a French dictionary, and you can just see some word where it's used time after time of various meanings and phrases, which are literally really a figure of speech, but an idiomatic expression. And so when a Hebrew said something was cast in the lake of fire, we got to the end of it. It's gone. Now we're getting down to something different. We have finished the outline, as it is outlined, under the seven churches with the words and so on that occur. They take us up to the new heaven and earth. Now we're taking up another subject in chapters 21 and 22. You see, we had three chapters for an introduction. We have two chapters for a closing. So chapters 4 to 20 inclusive are covered by the outline of the words that are in use in chapters 2 and 3 concerning the churches. Also, you will find words that are used in chapter 1 repeated over and over as to the person of Christ, describing him. For instance, you look at the description of Christ in chapter 1 and then in chapter 19 and compare. See the words that are used that are the same. This book is a much more united and one book than a lot of people think. Now, here we started in chapter 19 and verse 17 as an earth theme. And that goes right through to where we have finished here, 21. That is an earth scene. That's what he sees from the earth. You see, there are seven pairs of these scenes. Heaven, earth, and so on until you finish seven pairs, beginning of chapter 4. A perfect pattern. Well, I could do a lot more, I suppose, in going back, but I don't want to tire folks. I just want to say that when we start out of chapter 1, we have something new. A new heaven or new earth. 21. Yes, 21. New heaven, new earth. You see, God's new creation is not complete until there is an environment. Now, it is evident that when God created the sons of God, the angels, in the beginning, in Job 38, we find that they sang for joy when the foundations of this earth were laid. So then they were created before the earth was and placed in the earth. We find in Genesis 1 and 2 that Adam was created, and then a garden was prepared, and he was put in it. And here you have the overcomers, And you have a new heaven, a new earth, and a new Jerusalem, and you're put in it. There are new creations. That's good to give those parallels all the way through. I think that we will end that there, and we'll try to, I don't know if we can cover the next two chapters next time or not. And we think of a lot of things as we go along. So this will end our discussion, and we'll have our prayer. May we...